Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Network Saturday, February 25th, 2017. This is episode 1,366. Don't forget, just a couple of days left. If you haven't taken our Twit survey, it would be a great help to us if you would. It's quick, just a couple of minutes at twit.tv/survey. It helps us let advertisers know who's listening, not you specifically, but in general, what kinds of people listen to our shows. And it's a great help to us. We do this once a year. And if you can find the time, I'd appreciate it. twit.tv/survey. Do it while you're listening to the show. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk tech. Yeah, every week we do this, believe it or not. Yep, for the last 24 years, 25 years, something like that. I should find out, actually, when I started doing Tech Talk. It might be my 25th anniversary. It was either 91 or 92. It's at least my 25th anniversary. We started doing this. Nothing but answering questions about technology. Of course, 25 years ago, it was a different thing. We talked a lot about abacuses and StarTAC phones. I don't know what we were talking about. Windows 3.1 and DOS 5, I think. We've come a long way, baby. I always say, you know, there's a – I think this is probably not true, but there's a saying that if you start lifting a baby cow when it's born, and you probably can above your head, and you continue to do that every day, by the time it's a full-grown cow, you should be able to lift the entire cow because you've worked up to that. This is probably not true. But I feel like I've been lifting this baby cow, now a giant bull, and I do mean bull, since 1991. So, if you want to ask me a question, I'll just heft that heifer. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. If you want to call from the U.S. or Canada, that's toll-free. If outside that area, though, you can still use Skype out or something like that, and it shouldn't cost you anything. We have a website, techguylabs.com. That's where everything I say will be, so you don't have to write down any links or anything. In fact, the phone number's there. A link to our great chat room is there. Just remember, really, all you have to remember is techguylabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. We talk about computers. We talk about, well, now, since 1991, things have changed a little bit. The internet appeared. Can you believe that? It's not that old, is it? It's just a baby. Just a baby. We also talk about smartphones. Those didn't exist till 10 years ago, really, at least in their current slab of glass incarnation. Smart watches, those are only a few years old, right? Virtual reality, that's 25, 30 years old. Everything new is old again, or everything old is anyway. It's augmented reality, that's pretty new. Microsoft announced this week that they are going to defer development of HoloLens. You know about the HoloLens? Right now it's available for $3,500 as a developer's thing. But it's still very interesting. It's what we call augmented or mixed reality. Microsoft sells this to developers. It's a visor. You look like Geordi in Star Trek. You know, like you're wearing some special shades. And inside the visor, this is what's kind of interesting about HoloLens because it doesn't have any wires. Inside the visor is a full Windows 10 PC and all the hardware it needs to project things onto the lenses. So you can still see through the lenses like you're wearing sunglasses, but projected into a small window on the lenses is stuff from the computer. Could be the interface, menus, buttons, things like that. Could be a game. Microsoft showed people playing Minecraft where you look at a table, a real-life table in your
in your room. And but on top of it is a Minecraft castle that you've built. You can zoom into it and stuff. And it looks like it's on the table until you take off the HoloLens. They've also demonstrated teleconferencing. You're wearing HoloLens. Somebody in another city is wearing HoloLens. They look like they're there with you. You look like you're there with them. That's kind of neat. Anyway, Microsoft originally said, you know, sometime this year the next version would come out. They announced this week, and I think it might have been kind of misunderstood, that they weren't going to do version 2, that they were going to work hard on version 3, which would be out sometime in 2019, 2 years from now. I think some people thought, oh, see, it's a failure, it's not working. I didn't take it that way, and I think Microsoft didn't intend it that way. What they I think really were saying is, we're not going to waste time with any intermediate product. We're going to go straight to the final product. We're going to work as hard as our little programming fingers can to get HoloLens to its final state in a couple of years. And part of that is because there's competition. We've heard a lot about Apple, you know, maybe doing something like this year. I don't think so, but, you know, Apple's way behind. I mean, Google already has, you know, Google Cardboard, a little bit of cardboard. It was small enough and cheap enough. They actually bundled it with the New York Times last year. And you could put it up like a ViewMaster to your eyes and be in a 360-degree movie. You could look around. And they've been doing reporting like that. Google's doing some other interesting things, including an Academy Award-nominated short called Pearl. It'll be up for an Oscar tomorrow. That you can watch on a 2D screen, but you also could put on the lens or put on some other virtual reality helmet. Virtual reality is distinct from augmented reality because you can't see the outside world. You can only see what's projected on the screens in front of you. But this movie, Pearl, is cool. You're in a car, and it's a kind of a – you're watching a girl and scenes from her life as she grows up, and it's fantastic with music. The music's carefully designed so that it's – when you turn your head, it comes from a different – you know, it's 360-degree music as well as 360-degree video. So, you know, this is already out. Samsung has its Gear VR, and they've sold millions of those. Of course, there's the Oculus Rift and the Vive. So this is already out. So whatever Apple's doing, it better hurry up. It's got some catching up. You've got some catching up to do. Microsoft already has put out the HoloLens, but it's not a consumer product by any means, and it probably won't be for a couple of years. The issue there, I think, is battery life and power. You've got to get a lot of power and really good battery life into these sunglasses, or you know, it's not going to be practical. Lots of other companies, including one that everybody's watching carefully. It's raised more than $1 billion, called Magic Leap. And they have, you know, shown imaginary videos of what they hope to do. And it's pretty interesting. Technology is going very quickly in this. So we could talk a little bit about that, too. Self-driving vehicles, too. Google's Waymo, their self-driving vehicle initiative, just sued Uber over Otto. Uber bought Otto. Otto is a self-driving truck that's already been on the roads quite a bit. Delivered 22,000 cans of Bud, I believe, a couple of months ago. Without the driver was just, you know, kind of taking a nap in the cab in the back. That scares me a little bit. 18-wheeler rolling down at 80 miles an hour and the computer's driving it? Yikes. But that's coming too. Anyway, Google says, you know, and I think this is true. There's such a race. This is kind of analogous to the race in augmented and virtual reality. There's such a race for autonomous vehicles that companies are cutting corners. In this case, they claim Uber and Otto stole technology from Waymo. when did baby talk become the thing when you name a company? It's fairly recent. I think Google might have started the trend. Google. And then Yahoo. And it's just gone downhill since then. All the good names are taken. 0 Day said, Otto is blotto. let's see. I'll leave the politics out of it. Although we'll be watching with interest as the FCC slowly strips away privacy protections and net neutrality regulations. I think the goal of the new FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, is to eliminate regulation, basically. and what regulation is done. He'd like to have a, he says, a unified body, a uniform regulatory framework, not under the Federal Communications Commission. He thinks the Federal Trade Commission should be in charge of the internet. And, of course, the big ISPs like Comcast are saying, yeah, that's right, yeah. We agree. Great idea. Yeah, we could talk about that, too. 8888 Ask Leo, website techguylabs.com. Heather Hammond is there waiting for your call, and she'll pick a few of you, get the cowlicks flattened out, put a little powder on your nose, and we'll get you on the air right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. I didn't talk about, but I will later. Maybe I'll do it next hour. Because it's kind of a techie topic, kind of a high geek topic. But probably you'll be seeing news about a kind of serious security issue with a company called Cloudflare. And, you know, I'll have to, it's going to take some time to explain what it is and whether you need to worry about it. I guess the bottom line is, just in case you've seen stories about it, it's been all the, it's been the big story in tech news this week, is nothing to fear at this point, but keep an eye out. Cloudflare is a service used by thousands of websites to make it, I guess I'm going to go into this, aren't I? All right. Might as well, just quickly, since I brought it up, to make their sites respond more quickly and to avoid being brought down by a distributed denial of service hacker attacks. So, and Cloudflare is the most popular solution. They're really good. Unfortunately, there was a bug in some of their software, which might have leaked, and this is the scary thing, might have leaked information not about Cloudflare, but about the sites that use Cloudflare, which is pretty much every site you use. I mean, it's a lot of big sites, a lot of them. Not our sites, not Tech Guy Labs, but because I'm not big enough, but big sites. And the scare is, well, what was leaked? Which sites were affected? It doesn't look like it was all the sites that use Cloudflare. In fact, as best I can tell, it's a small number of sites that use Cloudflare. And it's not clear what information was leaked. But this has been a problem since September. It was only discovered a week ago today by a security researcher at Google, Tavis Ormadi, who's really the king of all this stuff. Google and Cloudflare did not release information about it till Friday or Thursday because they wanted to clear the Google search caches of any possible leaked information. You know, the search engines kind of cache, they store that stuff, and they didn't want anybody to get to it. So they were very careful not to say anything. They fixed the bug, they cleared the caches, and it's their belief that, you know, there's nobody who can take advantage of this retroactively. However, it's unknown whether somebody did discover it earlier and took advantage of it earlier. The thing to watch for is, you know, when you log into your sites, if they suggest you do a password reset, you should. But that's always true. Sites frequently, we hear about all these breaches all the time, these data breaches. And if a site ever says change your password, you should. One thing that will help, and you should be doing this anyway, is turning on what we call two-factor authentication. I know it's a pain in the behind, but it really does make you a lot safer. That is, you enter a password and then you either get texted a number or you have to use a special program or a card to get a second number beside the second piece of information besides your password. It's a second factor because it's not just something in your head, something you know, which is your password. It's something you have, your phone or a special dongle or key card. If you have that turned on, and you should for any sites that allow it, including Facebook and Twitter and Google. If you don't have that turned on, turn it on now. And if you want to be really proactive, you got a little time on the weekend, you might want to change passwords on a few of your sites. This is one of the reasons it's great to use a password manager like LastPass or 1Password, because they'll do this for you automatically. They will run a security check, use the watchtower feature of 1Password. They will let you know what sites' passwords need to be changed. So this is a ongoing story. We don't yet know how bad it is. It looks pretty bad. Cloudflare and Google did exactly the right thing. you can't even really blame Cloudflare. It wasn't their bug. It was a bug in some software, the library they used. Nevertheless, it's something fairly serious for everybody, and I'll keep you posted on this. A lot of misreporting going on too in the mainstream press. So keep your ear here, and I'll give you the real deal. Now let's say hello to the fabulous Heather Hammon, HH.
Shwoo, thank you, Uncle Leo.
Shwoo.
Because I'm worried about my OKCupid conversation.
OKCupid was one of them.
Really nice to everyone.
OKCupid was one of them. It wouldn't necessarily be your conversations, although it could be. See, this is the problem. It could be a variety of things, including your passwords. But a site like OKCupid probably is well secured.
What
I would do is, if there's something like OKCupid that you're worried about, go log in and see if they say to change the password. And then keep an eye on over the next week or so, because they're still trying to figure this out, too.
I like to practice safe computing.
Yes. It's getting harder and harder, though, isn't it? Yeah. Well, you've been talking to people on the phone, and you know, you are in the front lines talking to people about the things they care the most about. It's kind of like you're having your own kind of congressional constituent assemblies, and they come and they yell at you. And they say, Windows, what's going on? And that kind of thing. Who should I talk to first?
Joe in Weekiwachi, Florida. Poor Joe. I had to ask him how to spell it.
I'm glad you said that.
It's just like it sounds.
Weekiwachi. Sure it is. Thank you, Heather.
Yeah, Weekiwachi. That's where we have all the mermaids.
Weekiwachi.
Yeah.
All right. That's where mermaids come from. Nice.
Yeah, we're just about 60 miles north of Tampa.
Nice. What can I do for you?
I do a lot of photo shoots. And I'm trying to do something a little bit different where I'm using green screen technology.
Fun.
Okay, but
do you shoot mermaids?
Yeah.
Nice.
And they come out really good. The whole idea is, I know you have post-production where you can do your shots and then edit and have your backgrounds and everything put into it then. What I want to do, because when I do a lot of school photo shoots, like eighth grade dances.
Oh, yeah, that's where you want a backdrop, right?
Right. Yeah. And you have a couple hundred kids, you got to just go through really quick.
Yeah.
What I need, and I've seen a couple companies have them, but I haven't been able to get what I really need totally, is where when they sit behind a green screen, you have on your computer the background, and they can actually see it on the monitor.
Yeah.
You shoot them, and you print it, and it's already there. There's nothing else to do afterwards.
Yeah.
There's a couple companies, like I said, that I've seen it with, but one I've been trying to get in touch with for about 2 months, and every time you go to their site, it just says we're unavailable at this time.
Do you use, when you shoot, do you tether? Do you know what I mean? Do you tether to a laptop?
Just shooting with a regular backdrop.
Right, so this is the first step. You'll see this a lot of model shoots and advertising shoots. When you take a picture, it goes, and it goes right to a screen. Where it, you know, in Lightroom or in some other program where the client can see it,
right?
And that's called tethering, and that you can do it wirelessly. Most people want to because they'd like to be moving around, but in your case, wired would probably be all right too. That's the first step. You need to have a tether to software on the screen, because the software is what's going to do the keying. That is, replace the green with, you know, under the sea. So that's step one, is get tethering. And, you know, that means you're going to add something to your camera, usually a little radio transmitter, and to your laptop. Software, you need the software that'll do that, like Lightroom. We have to take a break, unfortunately. But when we come back, I'll talk a little bit about what software to do the keying with. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you. So as they say, so there is that list. People in the chat room are saying, well, what about this list on GitHub? We're talking about the Cloudflare issue. That list is a list of sites using Cloudflare. That's not enough. That's not what you need. In fact, they even say on this list, you know, disclaimer, this list contains all domains that use Cloudflare, not just the Cloudflare proxy. So the bug only hit sites that used not just the Cloudflare proxy, but two other technologies. They had to use all three for it to be a problem. So it is a much smaller... I don't like this list because it scares you because this is too many people. It's every Cloudflare customer. They are not all affected. So this is one of the reasons I really want to talk about this, because if people see this list, it's terrifying. And nobody reads the disclaimer. So if you read the Cloudflare has been very specific, but some say that they haven't been forthcoming. They're trying to cover it up. I don't believe that that's the case. So anyway, to go back, so you're still on the call, Joe. I didn't hang up on you. I just had to take a break because of the network.
Okay.
So you would be, you have the student, you have them in front of a green screen, and you can get, nice B&H sells green screens that are portable, that stretch out because you don't want any wrinkles, and you probably have to have a couple of lights just for the green screen because it has to be perfectly flatly lit.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't want the student's shadow cast on the green screen, so they need dedicated light. The screen needs dedicated lights.
Right. They have to be like 3-4 feet in front of it so you don't get the shadows.
Exactly.
Flares.
Exactly. There's lights for the students, but there's also lights for the screen, and the screen can't have any wrinkles. But so what you're making basically is a perfect green background. And then there are lots of programs. What we need, and I'm not sure off the top of my head, but I'm sure somebody listening will help me. There are lots of programs, I'm sure, that both tether and key, because that's what you need. You need tethering and keying, because what you want is you take the picture, it goes through the tether, wireless or not, into the computer. The computer then displays it. This is what they do in model shoots, and you see it all the time in ad shoots, because if you're doing an ad shoot, the client wants to see the picture. It's actually a bad trend, in my opinion, but anyway, the client wants to see the picture. So the ad director's standing there staring at every shot, and then move this. And so what you need is, and often Lightroom is used for that, but there are other programs you can use to tether. What we need is one that will key. I don't think Lightroom does keying. Capture One Pro, Yashimaru says. Yashimaru, does that do keying? Capture One Pro. It's a tethering program, I know. And so you just need one that does keying. And then what you'll do is you'll set up the key ahead of time without anybody in the picture. And then as they get in the picture, they'll actually see, each time you shoot it, they'll see, oh, there I am under the sea.
Yeah, sort of like when you have the fake magazine pictures.
Yeah, that's how they're doing it, too.
Is like a whole package that would have everything that I need, turnkey, ready to go.
Well, B&H definitely sells the green screen kits. Capture One is really kind of is probably the most popular tethering program. Let me see if it does keying. Yashimaru, does it do keying? Do you know?
Yeah, actually, B&H, I was looking at. They sell booths that the person sits in.
They have the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, I gotta run. We gotta come out of the break. I'm gonna go to Scott Wilkinson because it's his time, but I'll just recap here for you. Talked a little more with Joe during the break. He was looking for a I love this. You're doing high school photography, right? Say you're at the prom and the theme is under the sea, and what he wants is as each kid comes up, with their date, they stand in front of a green screen, and on the computer screen, he turns it around and shows them. They're there under the sea, and look, there's the lobster and Ariel the mermaid, and they're just, in the picture. And that's called keying, and you do it generally with a solid screen behind you. Blue or green is very common. It's a little tricky because if the girl or the guy are wearing green, that tends to disappear. And so if he's wearing a green necktie, he's going to have under the sea an under the sea necktie. May not be bad. They use blue or green because they're not colors that appear in human flesh usually, unless you're kind of queasy. And so they can be keyed out generally fairly easily. And then somebody in the chat room who is a photographer, Mashimaru, says, I use... And a lot of photographers use this Capture One Pro for tethering. And the only key would be if this does keying. And then Joe wanted to know, well, is there an all-in-one kit for this? And I said, I think yes, many photography supplies stores sell it. I've seen them on B&H Photo for sure. So there, yes, this is not an uncommon. What you want to do, you see it at amusement parks everywhere, right? And you know, at tourist locations, you picture a view, you know, with the seals or patting the lion or whatever. Scott Wilkinson is here, our home theater guru. Sorry to eat into your time, Scott.
That's quite all right.
Did you have a nice vacation?
Oh, mostly, yes.
You went to Esalen, where it was flooding, probably.
We wanted to go to Esalen.
Didn't
we
the bridge to go get to washed out?
The bridge got washed out. We were driving there, and we looked at Google Maps and said, wow, the road looks weird. Called Esalen. They said, turn around. Yeah. The bridge is out.
There was a crack in the bridge. They're going to have to replace it.
It's going to take a year.
Well, that'll make Esalen even more special. Only people with helicopters will be able to.
Exactly. The only way in and out of Big Sur right now is by helicopter.
Wow. Oh, I'm so sorry, because that is a wonderful spot.
It really
one
is.
One of the most beautiful places in the world.
Yep, it is. But, you know, people who live there, and there are locals, but they pay the price sometimes, just like people who live in other beautiful but sometimes occasionally dangerous places.
Right.
And now they're paying the price of we're trapped here, and how are we going to get supplies in? By helicopter.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That happens whenever there's it's not unusual. I can remember it happening in the past from heavy rain.
Well, yeah, but we haven't had heavy rain for
seven years. Yeah, we've been in the drought. Welcome to the wonderful wilds of nature. Now, you're not here to talk rain.
No, I'm not. I'm here to talk technology, and in fact, specifically video and audio technology. And I got a couple questions from listeners.
Okay, fire away.
Lance Pellissier is saying, with USB-C becoming more common on things like cell phones, MP3 players, laptops, and so on, in the future, may we see video over USB become the norm? And I think the answer is no. For one thing, USB, even the fastest USB, I believe is on the order of USB 3.1 is on the order of 10 gigabits per second. HDMI 2.0 is 18 gigabits per second. And HDMI 2.1, the new standard, which will be coming out later this year, is up to 48 gigabits per second. So that's going to be plenty to carry 4K, high dynamic range, lots of extra metadata and all sorts of things that USB would not be able to carry at 10 gigabits per second. So a lot of people are asking, you know, well, are we ever going to see a replacement for HDMI? HDMI is the one cable connection between devices now that is, you know, ubiquitous among audio, video, home theater type stuff. And people ask, well, what about USB? What about MHL, this sort of portable thing, which is kind of like HDMI. It's very similar. Or DisplayPort. And I say, even if they have the bandwidth, they have to overcome an incredible amount of inertia. Every product has an HDMI port on it. Only a few have DisplayPort. More in the computer world than in the home theater world. And I don't think DisplayPort or any other type of connection is really going to supplant HDMI because it's already so entrenched in the market, in the field. So anyway, that's what I think about that.
Good.
Stanford Brown asked...
By the way...
Yes?
Does anybody have to worry about that, or should you just go to the store and buy the TV and buy the cable and leave it at that? I mean,
you don't have to worry about it.
But what spec is this? Do you have to?
Well, there are a couple of reasons to be a little bit on, to be informed a little bit. Okay. The main one is with high dynamic range or HDR, there's a type of HDR very common called HDR10. And it has metadata in it that explains or describes how the content was created. And if that metadata does not survive going through, say, an audio-video receiver, then it won't get to the TV and the TV won't display it properly. So the audio video receiver or any device that you pass the signal through has to be able to pass that metadata. And that requires HDMI 2.0A. So HDMI does not want us talking about version numbers. As you just said, why do I even really need to think about this?
Yeah.
And they don't want you to.
No,
they
of course
would rather
not.
They would rather the manufacturer say, our device will pass HDR10 metadata.
Whoa, that's good. That's so much clearer.
So much clearer. Yeah, exactly. Or whatever the particular feature is, they want the manufacturers to say exactly what their HDMI feature list is. But manufacturers aren't going to do that. They're just not going to, especially not on the outside of the box or in their promotional materials when you're shopping.
That's why, and that this is the one argument for a standard like Dolby THX or UA. Well, what is it? The UHD premium. If you define a standard, and everybody agrees that that standard should include HDR10 compatibility, for instance.
Right.
Then all a consumer has to look for, and this is what we're recommending right now, if you buy a device, is UHD premium, right?
Well, yes, that UHD premium is really only mostly applies to displays, TVs.
Okay. So it won't help you if you're choosing a Blu-ray player or...
Sadly not.
So that's why you need that badge, because then you'll know, this is going to be compatible with everything I want.
Yep.
It is the case if you're buying a TV, you want 4K and
HDR,
that you should choose UHD premium, right?
That would be an assurance that it's doing what you want it to do.
But there's nothing like that for choosing a UHD Blu-ray player?
I don't think they have Ultra HD Premium certification for Blu-ray players. Dolby just announced a logo program to make sure that you know if a device will pass Dolby Vision.
But that doesn't tell you HDR10 because they're competitors.
No, it doesn't. Yep, that's right. Well, not competitors, but coexistent, shall we say.
Oh, they're competitors.
All right.
Scott Wilkinson, you'll find his work on the web at the ABS forums, absforum.com. And also, he is at the Home Theater Geek podcast, twit.tv/HTG. And he helps us in this minefield of buying new audiovisual technology. And it is, you can see, it's a minefield at this point.
It is, I'm afraid so.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott. We'll talk again next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. The more you talk about this, the more confusing it becomes.
I know.
So frustrating. See, I apologize for opening the Pandora's box, but I feel like we can't just say, HDMI, you need 1.6A.
Right. HDMI is a difficult subject. Because of that, you've got these numbers, which mean something. But the problem is the HDMI 2.0, any HDMI version number has a list of features that it supports. That does not mean that anybody who implements that version of HDMI will implement all those features.
Oh,
they can choose. They can say, I want to implement features 1, 3, 4, and 5
so
and not,
What is the solution?
I think you're right. Some sort of standardization of what does this logo
Some
mean?
Badging.
It's a badging kind of a thing. Yeah. That would be good. Yeah. I think that would be good. I think Ultra HD Premium has the right idea, but it only applies to a certain segment.
Right.
The Dolby logo program is the right idea, but it only applies to a certain feature.
Yeah.
I would love to see a logo program that really defines everything. This new HDMI 2.1 coming out, 48 gigabits per second, is tremendous. But if you implement 2.1, you don't have to go that fast. What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
So wow, that's really
It's a real mess. It really is. I don't have a final answer to it, but I just try to keep reporting. And
well, I think the final answer is to buy recommended hardware. Like go to AVS Forum and see what the reviewers say and then buy the recommended hardware for a lot of reasons.
Yep.
Somebody wanted to know, I got an LG B6, much like mine, same as mine, and it's HDR10 and Dolby Vision.
Correct.
So that's good.
That's very good.
He wants
that's
to know, is there anything else? Are there now going to be new standards it's incompatible with?
No. There's not going to be any new standard. Well, in
there's
a
that
sense,
there's that IMAX one, right? Isn't there an IMAX HDR?
No, it's a it's called Technicolor.
Technicolor. Okay.
And HLG. There are now four types of high dynamic range, and the 2017 LG OLEDs implement all four, or will with firmware updates.
So a firmware update would be okay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But okay, you're not going to get a firmware update to HDMI 2.1 because it's a fast...
That's
it
a
requires
hardware.
New hardware. Yeah. Yeah, that's a hardware thing. But you can get a firmware update in many cases. And in the case of the 2017 LG OLEDs, they will get a firmware update to do HLG, which is going to be more common with broadcast, and Technicolor HDR, which we haven't seen any examples of in the field yet. I'm looking forward to seeing it to see how it compares. At the moment, I prefer Dolby Vision. I think it just works better. And so
you don't get the choice, though, because whatever the movie is
whatever
encoded
the movie's
in.
Encoded in. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We are promised there are no Ultra HD Blu-ray discs currently available that are encoded with Dolby Vision HDR. It's all HDR 10. But we are promised from Warner, I think Universal and Lionsgate, to see discs with Dolby Vision encoding this year. And Dolby Vision HDR is already available by streaming. I still think it's a better HDR system, primarily because it uses what's called dynamic metadata.
Can you stick around for the top of the hour?
Yeah, sure can.
All right. So Punterab wants to confirm B6 owners will be able to update to the new standard.
That I'm not sure, but I'm going to visit LG next week, and I will ask.
Good. All right. Thank you, Scott. Now, if everybody will follow along and shake it up, baby, twist and shout. Come on, come on, baby now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We can work it on out. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. And we go back to the phones. Neil's on the line from Phoenix. Hi, Neil.
How you doing, Leo? Pleasure. Thank you for taking my call.
I'm wonderful. Thank you for calling.
Listen, I listened to last week's show, actually both of them, and at that time I took the advice and I purchased a Harmony Hub because I learned then that I could also use my Amazon Echo with it.
Yeah.
And I went I've got it set up. It's a little tricky, but once I got it going, it seems to work. But maybe I'm just ultimately lazy because, well, what I mean to say is I'm a cable cutter, so a cord cutter, excuse me. So I have an Apple TV and a Fire Stick, but no cable box. Got it all working together, except I noticed that once I've connected to the Apple TV, I can't then go into the Apple TV menu and say, start Netflix or start Twitter or whatever app I want it to run. Am I just being too lazy and asking too much of this, or am I missing a step here in this programming process?
So, first of all, you have the most recent Apple TV?
Yeah, Apple TV 4.
Okay, yeah, because it was not compatible with the earlier ones. I'm looking at the Harmony Hub setup. What you want, and so just to explain, and I bought one too after one of our chat room regulars, Dr. Mom, said how great it was. And you can do things like, say, watch Netflix to your Amazon Echo. You can, of course, do it on your app too. They have an app that works on tablets and phones. But you can also do activities, and this is what you want to do. What you would like to do is tell the Echo, I want to watch Netflix on the Apple TV. And the Echo would then tell the Harmony Hub, okay, turn on the TV, whatever, turn on whatever's needed. Make sure the Apple TV's woke. Make sure the receiver is set to, input 4. Make sure the TV is set to input 1, all of that. And then, and this is the last step, and the step you're not getting, tell the Apple TV to go to Netflix. Or tell the Apple TV to launch Victoria on Netflix or The Crown on Netflix.
or whatever, exactly. But as to why I have to pick the app first, but it doesn't do that. So once I've gotten it to launch Apple TV, I've got the Apple TV menu. Now I've got to grab the remote, which is my iPhone or whatever.
And yeah, isn't that frustrating? No. Yeah. This is, yeah, and I'm looking, and it's not clear whether it should be able to do more than that. It should be able to load at least apps. My suspicion is that Apple doesn't give it access past that. Are you pairing the Harmony app with the Apple TV? Are you telling it?
Well, I did. The setup was what it said, which was to let it discover, you launch the setup for the Harmony Hub, and then it takes you through setup, it joins your Wi-Fi, and then it searches for all of your equipment. And then it found the Apple TV, it found the Fire Stick.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm looking at it, and it says you can, with the Harmony app, control the Apple TV as if you have an Apple remote, but it's through the Harmony app.
You still have to navigate it.
You still have to navigate it. My guess that's a limitation of the Apple TV, that Apple doesn't have some sort of interface that the Harmony can hook into. The only device, this is what Miller Tech in our chat room is saying, the only device that allows you to launch apps or channels with the Harmony Hub is the Roku. Other devices, and it really is Apple that's saying no, other devices don't have a facility that the Harmony can control it with. This has always been my problem with universal remotes, is and I've always struggled with them a little bit, because they don't do exactly, that's what you want, right? You say, hey, I don't care where it is, I just want to watch The Crown, please. And it should know, and it should say, oh, yeah, The Crown's on Netflix, and you like to watch Netflix and then Apple TV, so let's fix that all up and go into The Crown. But I think it doesn't. I think only the Roku can do all of that. I'm not an expert. I have to continue to play with it myself, so I'm deferring to the chat room. I do have one of them. It's a main reason I got it, and the main value of it is that, my significant other and family members don't have to figure out which of the five remotes to access in which order to get the thing on. All they have to do is say, watch Netflix to the Echo, and at least it gets them that far, right?
Right.
And at that point, they can figure out, oh, well, now I pick up the Apple remote and do the rest. I think it may be that it doesn't do that final step, which would be so nice. And if that's the case, it's Apple. It's Apple not. And this is very Apple. They're so Apple. That's what they do. They don't want you to use other stuff. They want you to use their stuff. So I'll tell you what, it's a very good question. I don't know the definitive answer. It wouldn't surprise me if Apple doesn't give them access. So Miller Tech is saying you can't do that except with the Roku. You can only choose apps. You can only get that far. You can't get any farther. So I'll tell you what. We'll keep listening. Okay, we'll continue to look for an answer. Check the website at techguylabs.com. People can add comments there. So if they hear the show after the fact, they go, "Oh yeah, I know how to do that." And I haven't spent as much time as I'd like to. I'm going to play with that a little bit tonight and come back. We'll come back on the next show, and I'll see what I can get, how far I can get with the Harmony Hub. I was just happy that I could say, watch Netflix, and Netflix would come on. That at least gets the TV on, gets the receiver set the right place. That is such a huge step forward for everybody else in the family. I can do it. But, that's how it is, isn't it? There's one person. I wrote a manual. I had to write a 10-page manual for how to use our TV set. and nobody's going to go through that. First, turn on the TV and select input 1, HDMI 1. Okay, very important. Not HDMI 2, very important. Like HDMI 1. Then you need to turn on the TiVo. And then you need to turn on the AV receiver. Now already we're at three different remotes. And in the AV receiver, you need to make sure you go to cable sat. Okay, and once you're on cable sat, now you can pick up the Roku remote. And you can, This, unfortunately, even a universal remote like the Harmony Hub, as good as it is, doesn't get you to that last place, which you want it to be, which is, I just want to watch
The Crown. I just want to watch Rick and Morty. Can you please?
Let me just ask, because Scott Wilkinson's still around. Scott, do you use any universal remotes? Do you have any?
I use the Harmony.
Yeah. Are you able to do what this guy wants to do?
You know, I was focused on answering some questions.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't. Look, you're working overtime as it is. I can't complain. I just thought since you're there, I'll pull you in.
Sure. You know, I've not yet used a voice activated.
That's pretty cool.
I think I need to really start looking at
the
that
holy again. Grail of that would be able to say, would literally be able to say, hey, Echo, watch Archer. And it would know from there everything it needed to do to get the – and because our TV setups, especially if you listen to Scott, you've got all those fancy things like I did, are way too complicated.
Well, it is more complicated than it needs to be. And yes. I think these voice-activated systems
– they might be the solution.
Yep. They're certainly working towards that, towards Thank you, solving Scott. That problem.
I'm glad you're still here to help me. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hang in there. We'll be right back. Okay. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's the Wilker Man. All yours, Scott.
I get 500 seconds. Thank you very much. I must admit, I have not tried those voice-activated things yet, but I think I need to get an Echo.
The Harmony Hub works with the Echo. That's the idea.
Yeah, it does. Dr. Mom's been a big proponent of that, and I have not yet taken the time to investigate it myself, so I need to do that. I think Mike Heiss is in the chat room. I think he's done it. Haven't you, Mike? And Kavo. This thing Kavo. Cooper mentioned this. Is another thing that might be a good integrator or aggregator. One thing that sort of you say, I want to watch this, and it goes out and finds where it is, on what device, on what streaming platform, or what broadcast channel, or maybe on your DVR. I think Colleen at Twit turned me onto this at first. So I need to look into that too, because that's pretty cool. I learned about that just as I was going on vacation, so I didn't have a chance to really spend much time looking at it. But it does look pretty interesting. What little time I did spend on it, Caavo. I'm gonna have to check that out. Jim Four is asking, do you like the Yamaha receiver RX-481? I don't know that one in particular, but I do know that I like Yamaha receivers generally very much. In fact, my very first stereo receiver ever was a Yamaha, and it had a beautiful sound. I don't have it anymore, but that was decades ago. Anyway, Yamaha receivers are generally really excellent, so I would not hesitate recommending a Yamaha receiver at all. So let's see. What else? Mike Heiss, in fact, in the chat room was talking about the Sony UHD Blu-ray players. There are two announced, but not out yet. And will they do HDR10 and Dolby Vision? Sony's being very cagey about that. They're not saying, and I've asked them specifically, well, we're not revealing that yet. I guess when the player comes out, we'll know. The good news is the Oppo UDP 203, the LG UP970, and the Philips BDP7502 all do HDR10 and Dolby Vision, and they have two HDMI outputs. Here's another complication for you with regard to HDMI and what will it do. If you have one, ideally, you should have one HDMI connection from your player to your AV receiver, and then another one from your AV receiver to your TV. The problem is, will the AV receiver pass all the data that's coming from the player through its circuits and on to the TV? And the answer, as I just discovered, is probably not, especially when it comes to Dolby Vision. Even though Dolby Vision is technically a little easier to deal with from a data point of view than HDR10, because it embeds the metadata within the video stream rather than having it ride separately in a different layer. But even with that advantage, the AV receiver or soundbar, anything you need to pass an HDMI signal through, if it's not aware of the sort of special circumstances of Dolby Vision, it may very well not pass through, which is why Dolby is coming up with a logo program that says, if you can see this logo, it'll pass Dolby Vision through the AV receiver or whatever. So the answer is, to, if you don't have an AV receiver that has that, and most don't right now, the answer is to have two HDMI outputs from the player. One carrying the video is connected directly to the display. And that way there's no device for it to pass through and possibly get corrupted. The other one carries only the audio data typically to the AVR, and the AVR deals with the audio, whether it's Dolby Digital or DTS or Dolby Atmos or DTSX or whatever. The second HDMI output from the player goes to the AVR. What I'd rather see is one connection, as I said, that goes from the player to the AVR and then from the AVR to the display. And that'll happen next year or later this year. It's always something, isn't it? Jeez. Anyway, so that's the answer to that question. Let's see. Andrew MC. Yeah, I do know model numbers pretty well. All right, David Bind, I just won the lottery. What do you recommend I buy now that money is no option, no obstacle? I would definitely say go to Sony and buy a Cletus. This is meant to be a commercial display system. It's modular. You can build any size screen you want. It uses what's called micro LED, which is tiny, microscopic little LEDs, red, green, and blue, shining directly. The example we saw, the demo we saw at CES was just mind-blowing. Just mind-blowing. So it's tremendously expensive, but you said money, no object. Otherwise, I might suggest the 77-inch W7 OLED from LG. We don't have a price on that yet, but their 77-inch 2016 model, the G6, is $20,000. So we can imagine the W7 will be at least that much, probably more. But hey, money's no object. And then get JBL M2 speakers for front, for at least front, right, and left, center. If you if you want to do a projector, and money is no object, I'd say probably the JVC RS4500 laser illuminated projector. That's $35,000, 4K, or the Sony VPL5000. That's $50,000. And then get a good acoustically transparent screen. That'll be a few $1,000s. Could be up to 20 if you get a director's choice from Stewart Film Screen, which is a great frame with four-way masking, all beautiful. But hey, money's no object, right? And then get three M2 speakers. Put them behind the screen. And then LSR 708s for the surrounds and maybe 705s for the Atmos. Get a Trinov Altitude 32 processor. That's a good $15,000. I'm trying to spend all your money here for you, but it's easy to do in AV. That's for darn sure. Andrew MC, would I go for a projector or a flat panel? Depends on how good my light control is. If my light control in my room is really good, which it is, I would probably go for a projector, which I do. Panel is... Yeah.
Just because of the bigger screen?
Yeah, exactly. Although, I will say this, HDR, high dynamic range, is not nearly as well defined or established.
Yeah, I like direct view. I really do.
Yeah, many people do.
Yeah, I just sit close.
There you go.
It makes it big. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Have a great week. Sorry about Esalen.
Yeah, too. But we stayed in Cambria. It was lovely.
Oh, that's beautiful. Good. Yeah. All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones. You know, all that stuff with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still use a voice over the internet like Skype. Skype out and call us directly. 888-827-5536. That's what Kenny did in Springfield, Missouri. Hello, Kenny.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great.
Welcome. What can I do for you today?
Yes, I'm looking for a laptop that has great speakers, a good battery, maybe an RJ45 connection.
What's that for?
You know, just a...
For Ethernet, you mean?
All around laptop.
Internet?
Oh, yes, RJ45.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, okay.
You know, the gigabit Ethernet or higher.
So the toughest one is speakers because the laptop enclosure is fairly small. And, you know, there's a direct correlation between the quality of the speakers, the loudness of the speakers, and the size of the speakers. So small laptop speakers are never going to sound as good as even, you know, small desktop computer speakers. In fact, if you look at your computer speakers, they're so big. If you put them in the laptop, Well, it's not the TVs. They do it because they could put better speakers in TVs. They just figure, well, you're going to add your own nowadays. So let me think what would be a good laptop for you. What are you going to do with it?
Maybe play games and do some graphics. You know, I just want to, you know.
If you're willing to go with a what we call a desktop replacement laptop, a bigger, heavier laptop, then you can get decent speakers in it, and it can be a very good gaming system. But what you suffer from is it's heavy. It's going to be 8 or 9 pounds or 7 pounds at least. It's also battery life will be not so great. You might get an hour or two. So it's really designed to replace a desktop but be a little bit more portable. Is that the kind of thing you're looking for?
Okay, maybe lighter and sacrifice the killer speakers.
Okay.
And some okay speakers.
There are, you know, the reason I ask, there are some very good laptops from companies like Alienware. For gaming, they're specifically designed for gaming. I mean, they have some laptops that go crazy. They have one where the screen unfolds and you have three screens. That's not what you want, obviously. I think it's 10,000.
No, I'm just looking.
Yeah, that's crazy. But Alienware's laptops are designed for gaming. They have high-end processors. One of the things about gaming on a laptop is most laptops do not have they'll have mobile video cards, GPUs. They won't have the full desktop GPUs. Only laptops designed for gaming will have the high-power GPUs. I would look at Alienware. They go from 13 to 15 to 17-inch screens. All of them can use the fastest Intel processors out there. All of them offer full desktop NVIDIA cards. So you can go with a 1060, 70, or 80, and those are going to give you much better gaming. And because they are gaming systems, they're going to have pretty good speakers. I think this is probably along the lines of what you're looking for.
Okay, so Dell's Alienware.
Yeah. Yeah, they're from Dell. That's right. They acquired Alienware. There's also the Razer, R-A-Z-E-R. They started by making gaming mice and keyboards, and they now make really excellent gaming laptops. And they also have NVIDIA, you know, desktop NVIDIA cards in there. The Razer Blade, which a lot of people like, is a smaller gaming laptop because a lot of these tend to be, you know, huge. The only reason they're laptops is so you can take them to LAN parties or something. But the new Razer Blade, which is aptly named, can be very thin, very light, and yet have all of that power.
Does that have good battery life as well?
Yeah, much better battery life too.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder.
But you're talking things like desktop RAM, DDR4. You're talking, and desktop cards. All of those things will eat up memory faster than. You see, you can't, you know, it's one of those things where it's trade-offs. If you want better battery life, fine, but you're going to have slower RAM, you're going to have less RAM, you're going to have, mobile-class processors and mobile-class video cards, because everything else eats, you know, juice. So it's kind of a trade-off. You have to decide what kind of gaming, for instance.
Oh, just regular World of Warcraft. Or,
that's not too demanding. So if you're doing a really demanding game, if you were doing Call of Duty or Crysis or something like that, you know, you'd one of these Razors would be a good choice. Probably the Alienware would be even better. I think for World of Warcraft, a Razor Blade would be pretty good. I'm not sure what the battery life that they claim is, but I could just tell you when you see something like a GTX 1060 and DDR4 RAM, you're seeing something that's not going to have 8 hours of battery life, you know.
Okay, because of the RAM.
Yeah, it's just a trade-off. I really like the Razor Blade. I would say it's the sexiest of these, and given that you want light, I think it's a good choice. So that's probably
yeah.
The
one.
And they started 1,000
at CES.
Yeah, that's right. CES, we saw a lot of gaming laptops. The other thing I like that I really do like about the Alienware and the Razer is that they are powerful enough to run virtual reality headsets, and that's something I think that you should consider when you buy a computer these days. Can it run an HTC Vive or an Oculus Rift? You may not be buying it right away, but the fact that they can is, I think, is a good sign. Sorry, my Echo heard me say the word computer, and she gets very jealous. So the Warcraft is not a tough game to run. It'll run on almost anything, even including something like Microsoft Surface Pro 4. So it really comes down to. I think your Echo woke up too. Sorry. Really comes down to what compromises you want to make. You know, you can make a list. Battery life, you want that to be higher, then you're going to have power lower. Portability also generally affects battery life. There's just not as much room and so forth. If I were going to pick a game, if I were going to get a gaming laptop right now, I'd probably get the Razer Blade. Oh, it's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet. If you have an opinion, give us a ring, 8888-ASK-LEO. This is one of those subjects everybody has an opinion on. What's the best laptop? Do you notice that it's easy to have an opinion on the stuff that is simple? Everybody's got an opinion on what kind of potato chip is the best, right? Because anybody can have that opinion. What's the best gaming laptop? Everybody can have an opinion on that. A little more complicated when you say, well, should you get an i7 or an i5 microprocessor? Which one is the best and why? And it gets more complicated. Sometimes you do pay extra for that label, gaming. And, you know, if you want to save money, you could get a very – what I would do is go look at what is in a gaming laptop like the Razer Blade, make a note of the components, and then go somewhere like Dell or Lenovo or HP and see if you can match that. It won't have the styling. It probably won't have – some of the components won't be available, but you can get pretty close, and you'll probably save a lot of money. So that's another way to get something less expensive that will do many of the same things. World of Warcraft is not a difficult game to render. It's not easy either. It's nice to have a little bit more power. Hey, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's see who will be next. Ben in San Diego will be next. He's having trouble with Outlook. Oh. Okay. I have to gear up for this one. Let me go get a Snickers or something because I can get my brain working for an Outlook question. Somebody in the chat room saying MSI makes a good low cost gaming laptop. I like MSI laptops. My friend Trey Ratcliffe, the photographer who has abandoned Macintosh, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, decided to get a high end PC laptop to do Lightroom and Photoshop, and he bought one from MSI. So they've been making motherboards for years, but they're making some pretty good hardcore hardware. It's not, you know, the nice thing about the Razer, it glows, it's got multicolored keys, it's very sexy looking. An MSI computer is going to be very utilitarian looking, but maybe you don't care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Mobile World Congress begins in Barcelona tomorrow. Samsung will have its keynote address at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And I will be covering it on our podcast network. I'm going to come in a little bit before the radio show and do that and see what they have to announce. They won't announce, Samsung apparently won't announce new phones at Mobile World Congress. Typically, new phones are what Mobile World Congress is all about. But Samsung has decided it's a, and I think this is a growing trend. It's a little noisy at these trade shows. Everybody's announcing new phones. There'll be new Motorola phones, new LG phones. And Samsung's a big enough name, like Apple, they can have their own event. So they're going to announce the new Samsung Galaxy S8 next month for availability in April. And then I guess there'll be a Note 8 as well. Samsung says, yeah, we're going to do a Note. We're not going to abandon that, even though it exploded on everybody. We're going to, I was just looking at some brand ranking surveys, and Samsung really took a big hit. Big hit because of those Note 7 explosions. And, of course, announcements every time you got on a plane. If you've got a Samsung phone, a lot of times they wouldn't know that it's the Note 8 specifically. They'd look at any Samsung phone and say, oh, you can't bring that on the plane. It was just a mess. It's so bad for the brand. But they're going to try to recover, and they have enough money to market the heck out of it, so maybe they will. They'll make their announcement of tablets tomorrow. We do expect new phones. The Motorola G5, I'm a big fan of the G4. The G5 will be announced sometime in the next few days in Barcelona. LG will announce its G6. You want to fly a G6, you can. So we'll keep an eye on things. But the beginning of the Mobile World Congress starts. It all starts with the press conferences, which begin tomorrow. And I'll have all that news for you. Don't worry. You don't have to get up early and figure out what's going on. Just tune in the show. That's it. Brett's next from Woodbridge, New Jersey. Hi, Brett. Brett, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Mr. Funny Guy, Leo. my question is, I have Windows 10. And the clock is messed up, and I change the time in the BIOS, and every day it shows 3 hours behind because I'm Eastern Standard Time. So I called Microsoft, and they said that it's the CMOS.
Yeah, they're thinking that your battery's dead.
No, I checked the battery.
Well, yeah, because it sounds like it's keeping time. It's just the wrong time zone, right?
Well, there is no Eastern Standard Time when I check in Windows 10. There's only Pacific, U.S.
Oh, there's definitely Eastern Standard Time.
You sure?
Yeah. So what you're going to do is you're going to go to the control panel and make sure you've got the correct region set, and then you're going to look for the time settings.
Where do I go from control panel?
Well, actually, you probably, let me just see. I bet you can just tap on the time in your task manager. Let's see if I can do that. And
yeah, right click it.
Adjust date. Yeah, and it says what time zone. And you say you only see Pacific, but I if I scroll up, I'm sure I can see. Or I just scroll down, I can see
UTC Pacific.
Yeah, you want UTC minus 5. That's Eastern time.
So where do I?
Just scroll down till you get to. Get to UTC minus 5. You might be going the wrong direction.
I see a minus 9, minus 8.
Yeah, you want to go down to minus 5.
Wait, let me see if I see it, though. Minus 2.
No, you're going too far. Minus 5. Somewhere in between there. Make sure you pick that. Yeah, they thought, in fact, when you first, as anytime somebody says, oh, I think that there's something wrong with the time, my first thought is, well, how old is a computer? Because there's a battery in there, in most cases, a little coin-sized battery that can be replaced. Those are inexpensive batteries you can buy at the drugstore. And it backs up the time and date settings and other settings, very important settings about what kind of hard drive, what kind of hardware, and so forth. They back that up in an area of volatile memory that needs to be refreshed by a battery. And time is critical. If your time gets off, all sorts of things stop working, including things like internet certificates. But you said something critical, which is it's keeping time. They didn't hear you say that, or the notebook didn't say that. It's keeping time. It's just 3 hours off. That means you're in the wrong time zone. So if you go to the date and time settings in your control panel in time zone, you want to go for Eastern, it's UTC, which stands for Universal Coordinated Time. I know the letters are screwed up because it's in French. Universal Team Coordinate or something. I don't know what it is. But UTC, which is, you know, former Greenwich Mean Time or, you know, the definitive time. We're all some offset of that. Pacific time is 8 hours offset during our standard time. And you're in Eastern, which is 5 hours. So it's minus five, UTC minus five. And once you get there, it should be okay. I hope. Moving on to Chris in Miami. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Hey, long time no speak, my friend.
My buddy, old pal.
We're still waiting for you to come to Miami, you know. We got the port of Miami is wide open. We're waiting for you to cruise on in.
I'm coming to Miami. Well, we'll see. I'm hoping to come to Miami on my way to Cuba at the end of the year. But I'm afeared now because of all of the new restrictions that I won't be able to get back in the country.
Well, you know me, so you can get back in.
I'm going to say, I know Chris. Let me in. Oh. Do you know anybody who has Customs and Border Patrol? Do you know anybody there?
No, I don't actually, but I'll work on it real quick.
Would you get some friends? I do have friends. You know, every time I come into San Francisco, for many years, a guy would come up and say, I knew you were coming in. How you doing? I still had to get frisked, but he's a fan, and so I'm hoping. Actually, you know what? The last time I came into Miami, I came in from NASA in the Bahamas, and I'm going to admit it now. I think the statute of limitations is expired. I had purchased some Cuban cigars in NASA,
yeah,
and I was sweating. I mean, I was a little scared coming into Miami. And I was thrilled because we were going through the inspections and somebody says, oh, Leo, how you doing? Big fan of the show. And he said, come on through.
Yeah.
And I went, whew.
Yeah.
Whew. But I guess when I go to Cuba, I'm going to be very, because I think they look at your, where have you been? And that's probably a red flag. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how that's going to work out. We'll find out at the end of the year. Anyway, I'm sorry. What can I do for you, Chris?
Okay, so I'm having this issue with the speech recognition. Now, I had sent you an email via PGP on Feb 18.
Good man.
I never got a reply back from you.
But do you know how much email I get, Chris? I'm so sorry.
I know.
I apologize.
I wanted to ask you, though, because in here, in the GPG keychain, I have you in here at Leo at Leoville, but it says it was created on April 12, 2014, but it's only like two yellows.
That one's correct. So actually, let me take a break when we come back, because this is another subject I think people are interested in, how you send email securely. Now, email normally is like sending a postcard. Anybody along the way can read it. If you want to be private, and Chris apparently does, there are ways to protect your privacy, but it's a little complicated. We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris, let me open up your email. Part of the problem is that I can only read your email on a few of my computers. I don't have the right email program on this one, for instance. Mm-hmm. So if it's encrypted, I have to get my Mac at home.
Well, as long as your key is current, it says 2014.
Yeah, and so here's the trick, and I'll explain this when we come back. But I foolishly I've been making PGP keys since 2005, but when I made them foolishly, I didn't put I didn't keep track of the revocation password or get a revocation certificate, and so I can't revoke these old keys. Most of them I still can use. If you use them, I can, but some, not all of them. Some of them I don't remember what the passphrase was. So it's best, and it's always best in general to use the most recent key, which is the 2014 key.
Okay.
And so I'm sure I got it. I just can't read it until I get home. But because I can read, I can see that I got an email from you, but it's gobbledygook. But that's a good test to do. In fact, I encourage people to send me. And the way, you know, encrypted email, and I can verify that it's working properly. The way to do it is to go to my website, leolaporte.com. There's a link, PGP link there, and that's the most current key.
Okay. That's where I went.
Yep.
Yeah.
So is that the question, or do you want to hang on?
Well, no, because my main problem with Apple has been the com.apple speech recognition core speech recognized issue in Activity Monitor. It's using like well over a gig worth of memory, and I have 8 going to 16, but I mean, not even the engineers seem to be able to figure this out. Maybe you might not have an answer for me. So
speech recognition is one of those things that is memory intensive. In fact, it got much better as we started getting more memory. Because what speech recognition needs to do to be timely, to keep up with you, is keep a big vocabulary in RAM. So I don't think that's a bug. I think that they're going to use as much RAM as they can. Now, using a gig if you've got 8 is not the end of the world.
No, but
you should expect it to use a lot. Okay. And that's when speech recognition started becoming really good, when Dragon and others could really start using a lot of RAM.
Oh.
It was noticeably better because the vocab has to be kept in memory for it to quickly follow what you're saying.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I never knew that.
Apparently, the people you talked to didn't either.
No, it happened all the way up to the
But that's why you call me. So yeah. You got PGP working. I gave you kind of a bad answer when you called, because when I read the page at PGP Tools more closely, I saw it just didn't. It works with Sierra. It just doesn't work with the updated Sierra Mail. But you've got it working now, I take it.
Yeah, well, there's been an update. They sent out an update. And
this happens every single time. Apple updates mail, breaks PGP, which drives me crazy.
Yep.
And then a few months later, they come up with a fix for it. But the fix, in the meantime, you could still use GPG on Sierra. It just wouldn't integrate smoothly with Apple Mail. You'd have to do it manually, that's all.
I've had no trouble. They updated it so that it actually works now. Yeah.
I use it on MailMate, but I use it on Apple. That was my other solution is, I don't use Apple Mail. I use a program called MailMate on the Mac, which also supports GPG as well as S/MIME. And it's kept much more up to date than Apple keeps mail.
Oh, yeah. Mac Mail makes me crazy.
Yeah. Try MailMate. It's not free, but there's a free trial. I really like MailMate.
I'll give it a try.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Leo.
See ya.
You too.
He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett, our traveling guru. He joins us each and every week to talk about traveling like a... I notice it's not a rock star anymore. It's a movie star.
It's a movie star, yeah.
JohnnyJett.com, the king of travel of all kinds. But he's been homebound for the last few months because, well, he's got a new baby. Little Jackie Jett. So, hello, Johnny.
Jack Jett.
Jack. Jackie. Not Jackie. Come on. You don't ever call him Jackie or JJ?
JJ, but not Jackie.
JJ's good. I like that. JJJ.
Yeah, although I've been traveling, and I am traveling again. I'm speaking next weekend at the San Diego Travel and Adventure Show, and then I'll be at a lot of those shows all around the country, Philadelphia, Dallas,
nice.
Denver.
And you did, what was it, Chicago last week?
Chicago. Yeah. I did L.A. last week, New York a few weeks ago.
And your talk is travel like a movie star.
Without movie star money.
Ah, that's the key.
That is the key.
That's the key.
And one of my tips is like how to find cheap fares. And by the way, I hope you noticed or jumped on it. I sent a special deals newsletter right when I read about it. Norwegian Air Shuttle, they released $65 fares across the pond.
I've been meaning to ask you about that. Yeah, you could fly from the U.S. to Europe for as little as $69. What's the catch, Johnny?
It was just great marketing. It's
you don't have to pay for every piece of luggage. You don't have to pay to wear shoes.
Oh no, you do.
They're known as like Ryanair and Spirit, one of the low cost airlines in Europe, right?
For sure.
Yeah,
without a doubt. But again, if you can travel lightly and read all the rules before you get on their plane, find out what their fees are. They're incredible deals. I mean, $65 one way, including all taxes. So, but it was from New York. So, Stewart Airport, they fly out of smaller airports.
Like Stewart? I never even heard of Stewart.
Yeah, well,
do they have jets?
Yes, of course. It's a 737, and they fly.
Oh, it's a little jet.
So, it's 3-3. Yeah. It's a smaller plane. It's not like your normal going across the Atlantic. Yeah. But that's 70 miles north of New York City. But they also fly out of Providence, which you were very familiar with.
TF Green.
Yeah. And they also fly out of Bradley in Hartford.
And then just out of curiosity, where in Europe do you end up?
They're flying to Dublin. They're flying to Shannon, I think.
See, that's
Cork.
A great deal. But this is – so it's a promotional deal. It's not going to last very long, right? I mean, this can't be their regular fare.
It's not their regular fare, but their regular fares are really cheap. But I just brought up L.A. to Copenhagen for November, and there's fares for $199. And you can also – same thing out of I think they fly out of Oakland.
That's one way.
Those are one way, but still,
So,
yeah, it's Oakland they fly out.
$400 round trip, but it's still a great deal.
But again, whenever you fly these low fare carriers, you got to make sure you're not bringing a lot of bags on or checking a lot of bags.
Right. Because they charge you for the bags. They charge you for the food. Do they charge you for the toilet? No, they can't do that.
No, Ryanair joked about it, but they never.
They made a joke. I remember that. Yeah,
correct.
But they get you. I mean, they you'll find if you have carry on, they charge you, right?
Some. I don't think Norwegian does. But
Spirit charged me for carry on.
Spirit does. Yeah, they'll charge you up to $100. Spirit, if you wait till you get to the gate. Also, Frontier charges for carry on.
See, it feels like it's a game they're playing. Because they got a cheap fare up front, but they know they're going to get you.
Well, just this past week, United and American started selling their low fare, their economy fares. So when you buy these cheap tickets, you really need to read the fare rules, because United will not let you bring a carry-on to go in the overhead bin. You can bring like a purse to put underneath the seat. At American, if you want to bring a bag in the overhead bin, if you're buying this super cheap fare on certain markets, it's they charge you, I think, $25.
Wow.
So
wow.
Always read these fares now. It's not just the low fare carriers you have to worry about. But
yeah.
Speaking of traveling,
yes.
All around the world, my website this week is called The Earth Awaits. So T-H-E, Earth, and then Awaits, AWAITS.com. So I was speaking at one of these shows, and someone came up to me and said, hey, I want to retire overseas. Where should I go? And I said, well, I'm actually not an expert on it, but I do know that a lot of Americans like living in Mexico or Thailand because it's super cheap. Well, this website I just read about in the LA Times last week from Jen Leo, who I know is a fan of your show. She wrote it, and it's a great site for if you want to live overseas. You could do it for however long you want, but you just put in how much you want to spend a month, you know, how many people, how many bedrooms. If you want to live in the city or outside the city, if you want low crime, high crime, obviously you don't want high crime or the pollution level.
I can plan my retirement here. This is good.
Yeah.
You know what they're missing? I wish they had is health care.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they have health care, but on the next page it does have what the broadband is, the speed.
That's important.
That's
important. Wow. This is cool. And so they show you where I can move to Irvine. Irvine is like Fremont, California. So it's not just overseas. It's everywhere.
Not just overseas. Well, you checked. So right
Melbourne,
before you went
Florida,
to this page,
Hamilton, New Zealand,
where you want to live.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't eliminate the United States because I might want to stay here. Boulder's good. This is good.
Yeah, Boulder's a popular
city.
My
son lives in Boulder. I love Boulder.
So how much did you put in, by the way, for a monthly?
I think, I don't remember. Was it 5,000? Because there's a slider where you get to choose how much your monthly budget is. Yeah.
And also how you want
to live. As much as $5,000.
Okay. I put $5,000, but I put opulent. I want to live.
You want to live opulent? I said modest. Yeah. So let me try opulent. Okay. Crime rate low, population. Oh, pollution, I mean.
Pollution.
No, I don't want high pollution. Let's say low, okay? And I don't apartment type. I don't care. One bedroom, city center. Well, yeah,
no,
probably.
One bedroom.
All right, All right, Johnny's getting me costing more and more. All right, let's see. Now let's see where I should live.
Now there won't be so much in America. I think there's one shows up in Arkansas, Fayetteville.
Melbourne, Florida. Yeah, Heidelberg. I'd like to go to Heidelberg. That's a pretty town. That's a pretty.
It is
town.
Beautiful in Germany.
Low crime rate, low pollution. Nice town, Raleigh, North Carolina. Love Raleigh. See, these are good choices, yeah. Ann Arbor.
And again, and you could have just put South America if you wanted, or just Europe or Asia.
Well, I want to see the full range of options.
Right.
This is a good idea. I would like to see healthcare and internet in there, but that you say their internet is in here.
I actually think they do put healthcare in, but you have to pay for it.
Those are the things you really care about.
They have an upcharge.
Yeah.
So I did see more stats and stuff like that.
Earth awaits.
The Earth awaits.
You know what I thought would be kind of fun is living on a cruise boat. Is there such a thing where you could just move
without
in.
Without a doubt. Of course. One ship made a lot of news, I think, a decade ago called The World.
Yeah, it was like a condo. Ship. Condo cruise ship.
But it doesn't matter what cruise line. Pretty much every cruise line will sell you a cabin for
really?
A year round.
Oh.
And I think we've talked about this before.
Is it a good deal? Or is it you have to pay the normal rate?
You can definitely get a deal.
I should get a deal because I'm buying a whole year.
For sure. I've been on cruises where everyone knows this one person because they live
there.
And it's, and you know, depending on your lifestyle, it could be a lot cheaper than living in a senior center home. I would love to do it. Listen, I got to make enough money so I could, you know, live on Seabourn all year round.
I think it'd get boring after a while. I don't know. I'm willing to try. I'll be a guinea pig.
I definitely would gain a lot of weight.
Theworldawaits.com. Good choice. That's yes. Great. Do you have an app for us? We got about 50 seconds left.
50 seconds?
Yeah. Give me a quick app.
I don't have an app that quick a time.
Okay, then save it.
How about this?
Yeah.
How about a tip?
Okay.
So a lot of people, especially to Mexico, you know, don't use ATM machines that are on the street or in a convenience store or even in a hotel.
Go to the bank.
Use it. Yeah. You got to go to the bank where indoors, not outside. You don't want to use
skimmers.
ATM.
And that's true even in the U.S. now. That's everywhere.
I was going to say, not just Mexico, but pretty much all over. So always look for the skimmers or go to a well-known bank and go indoors.
Go inside.
Inside. That's the important part.
Johnny Jett. If you are not following Johnny Jett on Instagram or Twitter, you're missing great stuff. And, of course, his website is johnnyjett.com. Got those travel newsletters. Lots of great stuff. Free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nice advice. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Let's move on with more calls here. And Greg on the line from Redlands, California. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Leo. I got about a 5-year-old XPS laptop about 2 years ago, upgraded the hard drive and the optical drive to a couple solid states and put in some two 8 gigs of RAM for 16 total. But for lack of a better term, things are just getting weird. I know, you know, components are going out. I know my integrated cards
rats.
Getting worn out. So I'm looking at buying a new laptop. And my question was, I know things like hard drives have rewrite capacity to gauge, you know, their health. But what about RAM? Is there anything keeping me from just swapping those 16 gigs out in my new laptop?
Do you want to test it, you're saying, or do you want to swap it?
No, to save some money, can I just take those 16 gigs from my current laptop and plug them into my new one? And
probably not, but you got to figure it out. So there's a few factors involved here. It's not like a hard drive. There's nothing on the RAM, so you don't have to worry about copying anything over or anything like that. But it has to be exactly the right RAM. So the form factor has to be the same. Most laptops, if they have removable RAM, because we're seeing more and more laptops with RAM soldered onto the motherboard, you can neither upgrade them nor remove them. But if you have removable RAM, it'll be something called an SODIMM. And that's a standard probably your new laptop supports, but you got to make sure, in other words, physically it fits in the slots. And then the second issue is speed. And that's a little more tricky. The best way to figure it out is to figure out what you've got now and then what you need. And you can do that. Most of the RAM sites like Crucial and Kingston actually have RAM pickers. You can enter the model and of the laptop, the date and all that stuff. It'll tell you exactly what kind of RAM it will use. You know, SODIMM DDR3 at 120 milliseconds. But you need to match it pretty closely. If the timing is off, that could cause reliability issues. So it's just a question of making sure they're compatible. But if that's the case, if it's compatible, you just take it out of the old one, put it in the new one. We used to do that all the time. But times have changed and technology advanced quite a bit. And now, even in a couple of years, laptops will have changed the speed and timing of the RAM.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, and there's nothing with the hard drive. You got to think about what's on the hard drive. You want to take the old. But there's nothing in the RAM. The RAM, without power, it loses all its contents. Yeah, Apple solders on RAM. And I think more and more you're seeing companies to save money, save space, doing this, and it's a bad trend. But if you think about it, we're demanding faster, lighter, thinner computers, and that's how you get all of that. Is you put more and more on the motherboard, basically. You know, having a socket makes it much more challenging. From San Diego, Ben is next. Hi, Ben. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Man, I got lucky. getting on the show.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of, yeah, it's like Vegas. So you pull the handle and take a spin. What can I do for you?
My question is, I finally switched everything to Mac in about 2011, and I have issues syncing my Microsoft. I'm using Outlook for Mac, okay, which is basically a crippled version of Outlook, and I'm having trouble syncing with iCal. I would like to be able to sync with iCal either through Outlook. Being able to set up something in an Outlook calendar.
Yeah, so Outlook has its own calendar, right? And address book as well as email. And it's easy enough to export it, but syncing it is a little more tricky. And I haven't looked at this lately. In the past, you've had to buy a third-party sync tool. You know what I would do, though? This should work, is use Google's calendar as an intermediary. So you can sync
between them.
Yeah.
So I'm using Exchange, which I thought if I was using Exchange.
Oh, yeah, you should be able to use. Okay. So you have a company's Exchange server somewhere, or how are you using Exchange?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
My company has Exchange. And you know what? It used to work, and then it seems like it broke, you know, with different updates or something. And I don't know at what point it broke, you know, because I just don't pay that close of attention to it.
According to the internets, it broke with the 10.10.2 update. So fairly recently.
Is that El Capitan or is that before that?
That I think is is it El Capitan or is it Yosemite? It's pretty recent. So I can read you the steps. I'm going to put this in the show notes at techguylabs.com. It's from an Apple discussions thread. But I'll tell you the steps, and then you can. It's basically you've got to clear the calendar cache, you've got to restart iCal, rebuild the caches, and then, as you did before, turn on your Exchange calendar. Apparently, this did fix it for a number of people. You also maybe have to stop the calendar agent process, but I'm going to put what this is complicated. So what I'm going to do, and obviously you're driving, you don't want to, but I'm putting this in the show notes. Our James DeRuvo, who's watching carefully, listening to everything I say and writing it all down, is going to put this in the show notes for you at techguylabs.com. And that's really the best way to do this, because then you can read the details and all of that stuff. Okay.
That's great.
So when did it stop? When did it stop working for you? Fairly recently?
It was fairly recently. Yeah.
This is probably that problem, that specific issue.
Yeah, you know, it seems like Apple is. I've been wanting to switch to Apple for a long time, and I finally did. I spent a lot of money, and it's like Outlook for Mac. When do you have any?
I don't use Outlook. It's a Microsoft product, and I prefer not to, but you kind of need to, because your company is, it sounds like an all-Windows company, including running an Exchange server. So you're kind of...
Well, I'm the one that convinced them to run Exchange so I could sync my calendar.
You also have to make sure that the folks at work turn on that CalSync feature. They obviously did because it worked for a while, so...
Yeah.
So it's just, I think this is that 10.2 update, and... This is a fairly simple fix. Yeah, it sounds like it's a bug that you have to clear the caches.
Apple's now, it seems like, for the masses, when they used to be.
I'm very disappointed in the direction Apple's.
Big Brother in 1984.
I know. Yeah, they were in fact, that was their slogan, the computer for the rest of us.
That was the commercial.
Yeah. And I think that what's happened is the iPhone. The iPhone was such a success, and Apple can't ignore it, that all of their resources, all of their attention is on the iPhone, and now on finding the next thing, the successor of the iPhone. And so they've let let the Mac slide a little bit, which is, it is a shame, because it was nice
people
to have
use
that.
Mobile now, predominantly.
Everybody's
anyway.
Using a phone. That's the number one computer. They don't use tablets, they don't use desktops, they don't use laptops, they use their phones. So Apple's putting all its eggs
all
in that basket.
PowerPoint presentations from an iPad.
My problem is you can do it, but it's harder. And so I don't see why, as a user, I should have to kind of stuff myself into that, you know, that my square peg into that round hole. I should use the tool mm-hmm. that's right for the job. But unfortunately, Apple is so committed to, for instance, everybody should stop using computers and start using iPads. They've been spending a lot of energy promoting the iPad as your next laptop. And yeah, you can, but it's not the best solution. It really is disappointing to me, I think.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. I share your disappointment. Now, in this case, Microsoft is partly complicit. Make sure you're using the latest version of Office. And then if you go to techguylabs.com, that's our website, I have a link that I've put in here. This is show 1,366. The way the website's organized, it's by show, and then within each show, by hour, and then within in each hour, the caller. So you're the last caller in the second hour. and you'll see right there your question, my answer, and then James will put a link in the show notes. I've just pasted it in the chat so he has access to it, to that discussion thread from Apple's support pages that looks like it's exactly what you're talking about. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Sorry to keep you on hold for so long. 8888-ASK-LEO. I know a lot of you are still on hold. We got a lot more calls, and I'm going to give you my full attention. Anne Marie is coming up in just a bit from Orange County. Wants to know what the best computer is for video editing. Roger in L.A. He can't connect to his Wi-Fi. He's trying to figure out what's going on. And Evangeline in Virginia Beach. Can an old admin still access her computer and delete her files? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will answer all those calls in just a bit. Our show today, my friends, brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, from the number one, the best mortgage lender in the country, Quicken Loans. Now, I say they're the best. They're not the biggest. They're the second biggest. I think they have like $93 billion in loans that they've written. But they are the best in terms of customer satisfaction, and all it takes is one look at quickenloans.com/techguy and all those J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards year after year after year. The most beloved mortgage lender. And here's a reason I love them. Last time I did a loan, I did not go to Quicken Loans. It was about 3 or 4 years ago. We went to a local lender here. It took us, I've told this story before, like 6 weeks. We were on vacation faxing paperwork. We thought, oh, this will be done. You know, we started like 3 or 4 weeks before we left. But the house was were buying it. It was in process. And this was the last piece of the puzzle. And we went on vacation. We just kind of kept faxing them stuff. It just went on and on and on. It was a terrible experience. I could tell you, next time we buy a house or if we refi, we will be going to quickenloans.com/techguy because they've got a product that's complete opposite. It's called Rocket Mortgage. And just like a rocket, it implies speed, right? But also 21st century technology. It's all online. The entire mortgage approval process is on a computer. Not just a computer. You can do it on your phone. And it's fast because, computers. You could get approved in minutes, not weeks, minutes. So if you go to quickenloans.com/techguy, you will get a transparent process. This is important, too. You've got to have a mortgage lender not only you trust, but that you understand exactly what's going on. And Quicken Loans makes that very easy. Then you have buttons. You can choose your rate, choose your term, customize it exactly as you need it, and make sure you've got a solution that's right for you. You'll get approval in minutes for a solution that's tailored to your financial situation. You can even submit the paperwork you need, things like bank statements and check stubs, all that, online with a touch of a button. It couldn't be simpler. And minutes later, you know. Great, by the way, this is actually a really good use of it. Sometimes you drive by and you go, wow, there's that house is for sale. I've always wanted that house. Or look at that. Or you go to open houses because it's kind of fun and you go, hey, we should buy this house. Now, that house is already on the market. You need to get pre-approved for that loan right away before you make an offer. You can literally do that at the open house and show the realtor, we're approved, by the way. I mean, that is huge. Gives you a huge advantage. Quickenloans.com/techguy. For Rocket Mortgage, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage, quickenloans.com/techguy. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 8888. Ask Leo if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Anne Marie is next in Orange. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Thank you. So my husband and I started an internet television network.
What? That's awesome.
Second anniversary coming up. Thank you. And we're doing really well. And we've been editing our videos. We tape about 30 to 50 30-minute shows every week.
Where can I find this network?
It's called the Holy Spirit Broadcasting Network. It's at hsbn.tv.
Awesome. And do you do it out of your house? Do you have a studio? Where do you do it?
We have a small studio in Orange, and then we have one in Mesa. We are talking to people in Florida. We've got broadcasting coming in from Canada, from Uganda.
What's interesting is, of course, you know, you could do this on television networks if you could buy time or find somebody to carry you. But the internet means anybody can do this via the internet, and you get to Uganda by the internet, right? Everywhere. You might additionally, it sounds like you're doing this, add traditional television to it, but
we might, except for it seems like traditional television is kind of going away.
Yeah. Why not just be on the internet? I do an internet television network on technology, and that's how we distribute. It's all on the internet.
Well, one of the great things about our network is we've taken the time clock out of it. So if a pastor's on Monday,
he can talk as long as he wants.
Well, not that part.
That's what I do.
If you're on regular television, maybe you're on at 10 a.m.
Right.
Pacific Standard Time.
Right.
This is like if I want to tell somebody to go to watch my show, they can, and I'm on Monday, they can just go through and pick my icon.
We call on demand.
Right. Well, then we also have an on demand. What we call on demand.
So do you do live streaming as well?
We're not doing it right now, but we're looking into doing some more of that.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we do. The way we do the live streaming is it's not really a television show. It's you're watching the show being made because it's unedited. And then we take it and we edit it and we put it out just as you do. You can watch it at any time on the website.
We have had a little bit of problem with that in the past, and people starting to say stuff that yes. We didn't want to go out there.
Yes. In fact, we have we didn't have it. I just had instructed our engineers to put a warning on our calendar saying, "A." Times are, you know, flexible and subject to change because, you know, things happen and it's not a television network. Sometimes, you know, I arrive later, the equipment's not working or whatever. And B, these are unedited and we can't promise that, you know, everything you hear and see is what we want you to. If you want to be the controlled version, you're going to watch the edited version. So what can I do? I think this is great. And this is what's so exciting about the internet is it makes distribution available to everyone.
Well, see, and we have an app. We did have a Roku channel, but the people we went through kind of ripped us off. So
yeah, that happens.
Getting Roku within the next 30 to 60 days back again.
We ended up paying somebody to write an app for us, too. That's what, there are a lot of different ways to do this. But that makes it easier for your parishioners, your viewers, because they can get a Roku and an app and they can keep you on and watch.
Right. And with the internet, if I was going to go TV, I'd have to buy satellite. I'd have to be here. I'd have to be there.
It's very expensive.
With the internet, with no advertising, we're now being watched in like 185 countries.
Congratulations.
By like 30 million people.
Isn't that amazing? So, congratulations.
It's amazing.
Wonderful. That is just wonderful. Well, what can I do to help?
Okay. So currently in our Orange studio, this is our home base. We're filming about 30 to 50 30-minute shows a week, and then we got to edit. And
well, you do more than I do. Wow. I thought 25 a week was a lot. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so we've got like a line of five laptops sitting there on the desk, and we're running back and forth from computer, and I'm not doing the editing, and I don't know a lot about it, but I'm just wondering if there's a better setup for us. We're using PC, HP computers right now,
yeah.
And we're using Adobe Premiere, and I'm wondering if there's a desktop that would give us more power, because we
yeah.
can only do really one at a time.
Yeah, and so this is you're going to, we've solved all of these problems we had to over a period yeah. of 10 years. And this is a fairly complex setup, and I have some very good engineering staff. I'll tell you mm-hmm. kind of with broad brush how we do it.
Okay.
So we have studios set up. Mm-hmm. We record, and when we record it, we used to record it to a centralized fast hard drive called a SAN, or Storage Area Network, that every editor could then access. And that was a good setup, but it was very, very expensive. We've actually gone backwards, back to what they sometimes call SneakerNet. We record these on solid-state drives. We have a special device from Sound Devices that just records the video. When the show is done, the editor pops the cartridge out. It's a hard drive. And hand carries it down to his editing suite and edits it there. Believe it or not, that turned out to be more efficient and more reliable and a lot less expensive. Now, we do have backup recordings and so forth. We ended up going out and buying Dell Precision Workstation desktops, very fancy desktops, and we're using Adobe Premiere. I think that's a very good choice. And then there's a whole publishing back end that you have to do, too, because you have to get it up on the internet site. And
right.
we spent $250,000 on a back end that allowed the editors to upload it, and then an automatic system would ingest the video and spit out the various forms we need to the various sites they go to, YouTube, our own site. And so that's somewhat automated. And it has a big dashboard so the editors can see if it's worked or something. They could see where something has failed. And this has just evolved over time. We end up spending quite a bit of money to do it, but it's easily the most efficient way to do this. Laptops would be the least efficient way to do this.
Right, right.
So I think getting a few, I don't know, how many editors do you have?
We basically have two here in this location, and they're both part-time. And then we do have some of our broadcasters who are just Dropboxing their edited videos
yeah,
to us.
Yeah, you could do that. The problem is, of course, file sizes are big, and it takes a long time to do it. But I look at all the different preachers you have. This is fantastic. You're obviously really have it together, and I'm thrilled that you found an audience. I think the easiest – I'll send you to one resource, and I don't know how up-to-date it is, but we have a wiki, which is a website created by us and users, that describes the equipment we use. That will give you some starting point. That's wiki.twit, which is the name of my network, .tv. Uh-huh. TWIT stands for This Week in Tech. So at wiki.twit.tv, you'll see a bunch of stuff on the front page, but one of them is how we make TWIT. And that has at least a little bit more in-depth discussion. You'd need to get – do you have an engineer? Do you have somebody who handles all this stuff, or is it you?
Yeah. No, we have an engineer in Backwoods, Kentucky or something.
That's great. If you have a good engineer, send him to that site. And if he wants to know more, email me, leo@twit.tv or leo@techguylabs.com. And I will send you to our engineers, and we can give you some more information about how we do it, or maybe talk to him directly. Because we have basically solved this problem because no one else had ever done it before. And I think we've got a pretty good system. Congratulations on your good work. That's great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's really neat that you've been able to... Oh, she's gone. Oh, well. That's pretty neat, huh? And she has a bunch of pastors. This is really amazing. It's very much like TWIT, but for Christian broadcasting, basically. And then they have paid, you know, they're not going to put advertising in there. So that's really neat. That's really neat. Dr. Andrew and Pastor Anne Marie Bills. And I guess we were talking to Anne Marie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. I put a link in the show notes, techilabs.com, for Anne Marie, to the equipment we use in our studio. I wish it were more complete. Nobody's really sat down and written up exactly how we do it. Everybody's too busy doing it to document it, and that's often a problem in that technology. MicroStamp is in our chat room. Remember, he called last week with a slow, solid-state drive, and part of the debate was whether it was an issue of trim not being used on that drive. MicroStamp was using a third-party SSD in an Apple computer. He says it turns out there was nothing wrong with the solid-state drive. It was just a bad external USB backup drive. And that's often the case, you know. Drives can, USB in particular, can cause all sorts of problems. If you have trouble with a computer booting up, for instance, I've learned over many years of unhappy experiences, the first thing I do is unplug all the USB devices, make sure none of them are causing a problem. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. Roger in L.A. is next. Hi, Roger.
Hi.
How are you? Welcome.
Oh, fine. Thank you. Yes, the reason that I'm calling is that I just recently, within the last year, purchased an Asus laptop, and it has Windows 10 on it. Mm-hmm. And there's two strange things that's occurring. Number one, when I put the computer to sleep and close the lid, then at times when I open it up, it does reboot.
Yeah.
So it shuts off. And I've been searching on the internet, and it seems as though other people have had that problem, but I haven't found a definitive way in which to address that issue.
So you're using the computer, it's fine, you shut it down, and it's not plugged in. Normally when you have the lid closed, it puts it to sleep. But occasionally, not always, you'll open it up and it reboots. Now,
sometimes I will put it to sleep. Other times, I'll just close the lid.
Yeah, and there's a setting in the power settings of what to do when the lid is closed. And the default is almost always put it to sleep.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a couple of low power states. There's really three low power states that all computers can go into. One is off. And that's what's happened. It's either rebooting or it turned off. The other two are sleep, which is the least low power state. It turns off the screen. It powers down a few things, but it does kind of, it has to continue to refresh memory. So power is still being used. In many cases with modern operating systems, periodically the computer will kind of wake up and get mail and things like that. There's another state, which I generally don't recommend. A lot of computers have problems with, called hibernate, which is as low power as off. It's effectively off, except it did one thing. Before it shut off, it saved the contents of RAM to the hard drive. When you hibernate, it takes a while to go to sleep, but then when you open up the lid, it wakes up from hibernation, is in effect turning on loading memory, and the advantage of that is it gets you back to where you were in the middle of whatever project you were in, but it does save the most power. Since you're going to sleep, it could be that power is dying on you. Is it an issue?
You
still have battery life when you turn it on and it's been rebooted.
Well, I actually have the computer plugged in.
Oh, okay.
And so it's not an issue of that.
And let me ask you: is it that it has rebooted, or does it actually reboot when you open the lid?
Well, when I open the lid and I push the key, like let's say if it's sleep, sometimes
you wake up the screen, and what is on the screen?
Nothing. It does reboot.
You're basically saying start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it's restarting.
So yeah. It has shut down.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what kind of computer is it? You said an Asus?
An Asus.
And how old is it?
I purchased this, like, I believe it was less than a year ago.
It's brand new, Asus. Yeah. Somebody in the chat room saying, oh, Windows 10 power and sleep issues. What a novel. he's being sarcastic. It's a very, very, very common. I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. You know, the first place to look, and I bet you've already looked, is in your power settings.
Yep.
And all of those look normal, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it sounds like at some point during its sleep, it turns itself off.
Right.
And it doesn't say when you come back, oh, we had a crash. It just...
Oh, no.
It's as if you shut it off and it came back.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, sometimes what I'll have... I mean, it... if I have a program running, then it will act as though it crashed. So in other words, if I have, a lot of times I'll put it to sleep and it has, I'm running.
You have the browser open or work. Yeah.
And then, I get the oops and so on and so forth.
So, okay, that's interesting. So that's good. That means it wasn't this is a good clue. It wasn't an orderly shutdown. Whatever happened while the lid was closed, it wasn't an orderly shutdown because Firefox said, hey, I wasn't closed properly.
Exactly.
So what happens, it sounds like some point, it's not losing power because it's plugged in. That would be, if you lose power, that would make sense.
Right.
Does something crashed the computer or shut it down abruptly? It wasn't a normal shutdown or Firefox wouldn't be complaining.
See, I was trying to, it sounded to me like it's more of a software problem than a hardware problem, which is one of the reasons why I didn't.
Well, I'll tell you why it might not be. It could be a hardware problem. So there's a couple of situations that could cause this a hardware issue. For instance, it's in sleep mode. Have you ever noticed whether the fans ever come on in sleep mode? Because it could be in sleep. It could be in sleep mode. Here's the scenario. By the way, I'm just grasping at straws because there's many, many things it could be, and I don't have any evidence that it's one over the other. But one of the things it could be is that, in fact, it's heating up and it shuts down to protect itself. That would give you exactly that profile. And that would be a hardware issue, right? Or the power supply glitches and poof, it just shuts down, hard shutdown. You open it up and it turns, says, oh, I got to boot up.
Okay.
So it could be hardware. It probably is software. I agree with you.
Well, I could take it back to the store and complain and then see what they say.
Well, I'll tell you what they're going to tell you, and you probably should do this anyway, is they're going to say, okay, the system recovery partition? That the button that says redo it? I want you to erase the hard drive and start all over again.
Okay.
And that's, they'll make you do that before they'll take it back.
Okay.
So, because what they want to do is verify that it isn't a software issue. And that's the advantage of doing that. And you might want to do that if you could just back up your data and just restore it, complete restore from scratch, and see if it comes back. And if it doesn't, then it was a software issue. If it does, then it's almost certainly a hardware issue. The other thing you can do, somebody's reminding me, is use the event viewer to look at the event log. And see what the last entry in the log was after you put it to sleep. It could tell you what was running and if something crashed. You're going to have to do some sort of detective work like that because you don't have enough information right now to know what it is. Could be overheating, could be a power supply issue, could be a wild program crashing the whole system. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If it is a program crashing the system, though, it's going to be driver level. It has to be a Ring Zero capable program. So it would be more likely a driver going, bonkers and crashing the system.
Right.
And that would be your software error. So another thing to do proactive. If that's the case, by the way, you might see some evidence of that in the event logs, but more likely you wouldn't because it's not recording anything. It's not doing anything. It just the video driver has a memory leak, and after a while it uses all the memory and crashes the whole thing. So it'd be worth making sure you have all the latest drivers for all the hardware. ASUS should have all of those. Update the firmware.
Okay. And that might solve my other problem, which is I have Wi-Fi. It's on. It's working. And all of a sudden, my computer disconnects from the Wi-Fi. I mean, and I try and connect it, and it says it can't.
Oh, yeah. This might be related.
And so what I end up having to do is either reboot the computer.
Yeah.
I might turn it off. Close the lid and bring it back up. And I've tried. I turned off Wi-Fi, turned it back on, put it in airplane mode, turned it back on, disconnect it, reconnect it. And it just doesn't do it. And then I guess when I reboot it, then all of a sudden I get Wi-Fi again. So maybe it is...
Not good.
I'm teaching, I have everything set up, and then I go to class, and I'm ready to show something on YouTube or whatever, and all of a sudden, my Wi-Fi isn't working.
I would definitely look at the Wi-Fi drivers. Mm-hmm. They may be crashing. And they may be causing a full system crash. But it also may be, is it still under warranty? You said it was a year old?
Yeah, I think it's a year old.
If it's still under warranty and you got a 1 year, this might be a really good time to bring it back.
Okay.
These sound like they're, this does sound like hardware, frankly. I mean, it could be, you can't tell. I don't have enough information to know.
Right.
But it could easily be a hardware issue, which you wouldn't be able to fix.
Right. Exactly.
And in which case they'd have to give you a new computer. Did you buy it from a store?
I got it from Best Buy.
Oh, I think they have a pretty liberal return policy. I would just bring it back and get a new one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, but do it before the warranty runs out any minute.
Exactly.
These all seem to fail right when the warranty runs out.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you teach?
I teach at California State University, Northridge, marketing and management.
Great.
Two different departments.
Fun. Well, it's nice to meet you. Okay. I'm sorry I don't have anything more specific, but it's kind of, these are the problems that it's so hard to diagnose without.
Oh, no, I understand. I mean, I used to, long time ago, I used to work for AT&T and I used to troubleshoot electronic.
Oh, well, you know.
Switching systems over the telephone.
Oh, God, you know. You know. Those are long calls, I know. Most exactly. of the time, you're on with them for hours. Hey, thanks exactly. for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Hope we helped. All right, take care, Roger.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Talked a little more with Roger about things to look at. And, you know, it's so hard to diagnose these things. He says, well, I'm sympathetic. He says, I worked for AT&T for a while diagnosing long distance via phone calls, switching, electronic switching equipment, long calls. It reminds me earlier this week, I was setting up my daughter has a new apartment. She's a college senior getting ready for life and helped her set up the internet because, you know, dad's the tech guy. Can't make her do it herself, and spent some fun time on the phone with Comcast. Always a pleasure. But I was really realizing the Comcast people were great. The CSRs, the customer service reps, were very helpful. We had a modem. We were trying to get to work. But they have a challenging job, and I think this is not unusual. That Comcast is a really good example of this because Comcast grew by accretion, you know, like a barnacle. And by acquiring companies. And the problem is every company had its own system, and they kind of cobbled these together. They've grown so fast over such a short period of time that they weren't able to replace it with, or still haven't been able to replace it with, one universal system. So they have all these incompatible systems talking to one another. The system the customer service rep uses is different from the one that the service tech at your house is using is different from the one that corporate uses. It's crazy. And I actually enjoyed the call. I spent maybe an hour online with a tier two customer support trying to get this thing work. And it really confirmed what I had thought and had heard from other customer service reps. She's looking and she said, well, this is wrong. These settings are wrong. I know they're wrong, but I can't change them. They're grayed out. And, you know, she said, well, I'm going to do this. I think this will make it work. But, you know, people are, when you call in, the service rep's going to say, well, this you can't be using this equipment. This somebody else owns this equipment. And just say, I know. I've already been through this and we figured it out. Don't mess with it. And I feel for you. So if you're working as a customer service rep at Comcast or one of many companies where you've got these incompatible systems, maybe they're out of date. Maybe they just don't talk to each other. It's a big deal to go through a company the size of Comcast with as many customers as they have. They're the largest internet service provider in the country and just rewrite everything from the ground up. It's what needs to happen, but it's like changing the engine of a jet airplane mid-flight. So it was an interesting call, and I have some sympathy. And I think if you've ever done customer support, it can be challenging. Evangeline is on the line. Love that name. From Virginia Beach. Hi, Evangeline.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing? I'm a first-time caller and a long-time listener.
Oh, nice to talk to you. Was your mom an Emmy Lou Harris fan? Or
No, she wasn't.
I just
wanted to say your screener is awesome. She was very good at helping me frame my question.
Isn't Heather wonderful? I love Heather.
She's absolutely awesome.
Well, good. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to say I have a hand-me-down laptop, which I think is really awesome anyway. And it has an old administrator on there. And I Well, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, who is that old administrator, right? Where'd they come from?
It's from an old school. It's from one of the old schools. And I just wanted to find out, is there any way that they could remotely come and
wipe off? No. They'd have to have physical apps access to your system. Unless...
I know they were, like, linked all together.
Ah, well, okay, so...
That they gave to the different students.
Yeah, unless they had software on there that allowed them to log in. And sounds like they did.
So
conceivably, generally my recommendation if you get a secondhand computer is to erase the drive and start fresh, because otherwise you're inheriting what other problems they had. But the reason people often don't do that is, well, you don't have a Windows install disk lying around, do you?
A Windows what?
A Windows installer lying around, do you? What version of Windows is it running?
It's running 8.1.
Okay. And when you did, at any point did you get Microsoft pop up something saying, would you like to upgrade to Windows 10?
Not that I know
no.
of.
Okay.
It wasn't made known to me. It was just as a gift because I'm going to school and my laptop is so outdated.
Yeah. It's a nice gift. In theory, if they had remote access software pre-installed in that computer, it's conceivable. They'd have to know, though, things like your internet address. It would be very hard for them to do that. On the other hand, they could sit down and log into your computer, and that would be another, you know, then they'd be able to log into that account. Do you have the password for that administrator account?
I don't know that he does. My son was the one that gave it to me, and I know he will, because he was using it temporarily for a couple of months, and then he wound up getting a whole new laptop for himself.
Well, one thing it wouldn't be a bad idea to do, get the password, log into that account, look at what's installed on there, remove anything that says remote access or VPN or anything like that, and then change the administrator password so that only you know it. But
okay,
nobody...
Now, he has it where when you open it up, he's given me my own passcode where I can log in that way.
Yeah, he set you up.
I don't know.
So,
okay, yeah, because I know he did a lot of stuff he said he still wasn't sure if that was something they could do.
Yeah, could be. You know, you can't ever say for sure because you don't know what they did to it. They could easily have put something called a RAT on there, a remote access Trojan that allows them to log in and see everything you're doing, even turn on the camera. But it came from a nice people, right? It didn't come from some bad guy.
Well, I don't know if there's... No, it wasn't bad. It was the ones that got shut down not too long ago, whom I won't mention, but I'm sure you're
But they went out of business. They weren't...
Yes,
yeah.
They went out of...
I think you're probably all right. But this is really important to understand. When you're inheriting somebody's computer, you don't know what's on there. And there is always...
It was my son's, but I'm not worried about what.
Oh, I see.
It was the fact that it was tied to his school, and the school shut down.
Yeah, but the school probably had software on there to monitor what the kids were doing with the computer.
Okay.
And so it could still be active if somebody who worked there knew how to do it.
Yeah, but it's got shut down. So
yeah, but that person didn't die. They didn't. They're still around, right? I mean, but they're working for somebody. The person who set it up is working for somebody else now. He didn't move to, you know, Spain. I mean, he's still around, right? Whoever set that up. So that person may have a way to access your computer. Yes. I don't know if you should worry about that or not. In general, what I would like you to do, and I would recommend you ask your son to do, is to wipe that computer and reinstall the operating system. That's the safest thing to do.
Okay.
I don't think there's a danger, but I can't tell you there's not because I don't, you know, just as you can't, we don't know what's on there. So the safest thing to do, and it's always the case when you get a used computer, is to wipe the drive and reinstall Windows. You have a Windows recovery partition on there, which you could use to do that with. Your son will probably know how to do that if he was a student there.
Okay.
All right. So
reinstall. So is that done with a disk or something?
No, you have all the stuff you need on the computer. Yeah, if you go to Windows, if you hit the Windows key and type recovery. But your son will know how to do that. Now, make sure you back up anything you did and saved on that computer. Because what I want you to do is wipe the hard drive and reinstall it. It's the only way you can be sure that that thing is clean as a whistle. That's the way it should work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last segment of the show, and I like to go out with a bang. That's why every day, every week, we get this guy on, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and our gizmo wizard, or gizwiz for short. Hi, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
You got a gizmo for me?
You know what, Leo? If we had these when we were kids, we would be happier than we are now. Well, maybe not. No,
well,
maybe
wait
not.
A minute. Don't tell me. Funyuns? I don't know what.
No. Okay, so Toy Fair was in town this week.
Oh, Toy Fair. Man, I'm so
jealous.
So
I go over and I see this go-kart, electric go-kart. And I said, so what's the go-kart doing here? And she said, well, it's not just a go-kart. It's a smart go-kart.
Ooh.
With its own Wi-Fi system so that you can geofence where you want your kid to drive his smart cart. Where you can monitor his speed. You can see how fast he's driving.
Ooh.
And this goes up to 12 miles an hour.
Yikes.
And if you don't like it, you can dial his speed back. And I said, well, what happens if he just drives right out of the geofence system? Does it just stop dead? And they said, well, no, for as a safety thing, but it just slows the cart way down. So he's going to be very,
be
very unhappy about that. So since it has twin electric motors, it doesn't have the sounds of a high-powered car. But through the GPS, you can play engine sounds through the two speakers built into the seat.
What?
Okay. And
what,
finally,
you know what? When we were kids, we went vroom, vroom, and we were happy.
Yeah, exactly. An orange crate on a pair of skates.
And if we went out of the geo-fenced area, it wouldn't slow down. But
your
mom would give
say,
us a,
you're not getting any dessert.
Give us a whipping.
Back here, you.
Yeah. So what's the name of this amazing 21st century?
So it's from Active Motors, and it's the Arrow Smart Cart. It's $999.
Ouch. Okay.
Well, don't forget. Now, it also has a collision avoidance system built in.
Get the kid used to self-driving cars now.
Yes, exactly. And as a go-kart, it's $999. If you want to add the body, like a red or a silver body, it's $200 more.
Oh,
so there you
wow.
go. There's
now, what ages would this be appropriate?
You know, it says from ages 5 to 9.
Okay, so it's pretty little.
It's pretty little, yeah. Exactly.
And how long does it go on a charge? That's
you know what? You can charge 45 minutes on the battery that comes with it, an hour and a half if you want to buy the double energy
a
battery.
A go-kart with Wi-Fi and GPS.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow,
and then the kid can also, when he gets home, his app will tell him how far he drove, where he drove. It's pretty neat.
Does it self-park?
No, not yet.
I like the geofence, though. You could say you can't go out of the yard, and they really can't.
They really can't, yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not for public roads, but
this is pretty cool.
Parking lots.
It's a little pricey, but boy, that's pretty
neat.
It's
pretty neat. Pretty
yeah.
neat.
It's from Active, ACTEV, because it's an electro volt thing car.
Yeah, that's it.
EV. What does EV stand for? Electric?
I have no
electric vehicle, maybe.
Oh, that could be.
Yeah,
that's probably.
Electric vehicle. EV. And it's from ACTEVmotors.com, the Arrow. I want one of these. You're right. I would have loved one of these.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not showing my kid. He'd be pretty excited. But he's over 9, so I guess he couldn't fit in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you're getting him a Tesla anyway, right?
They have little Teslas for kids, you know.
Do they?
Yeah. Tesla go-karts.
Oh my gosh. They
got to be more than $1,000 though.
I would think so.
Yeah.
But the great thing is he can just take the battery out of your car.
It's from Radio Flyer, you know, the wagon people. We've come a long way. The Model S for children. Ages 3 to 8. I don't know. Does it have the self-driving stuff? Probably not. But it does have an MP3 sound system and a front trunk. Working headlights, working horn, spacious interior.
Wow.
I wonder how much that costs.
Drive around the playground and pick up the female toddlers.
Yeah. Hey, baby, you want to go for a ride my Tesla? If you want to see more about anything, Dick, oh, look, it even has a little plug-in charger that goes right where the Tesla's charger goes.
That is so funny.
Oh, my goodness.
That is so great.
Oh, my goodness. The Radio Flyer. They made those red wagons you and I played in.
Yeah.
Dick is at gizwiz.biz. That's his website. So if you go to gizwiz.biz, you can see the, you know, link to the active arrow and all the other great stuff Dick talks about, not just in this show, but many other shows, including ABC's World News Now. You'll also find a link to the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. This is it, right? We got two more days.
Yeah, a couple more days.
Yeah.
Like,
end of the month.
Tuesday.
And there's 12 autographed Mad Magazines for the right answer. You have to identify a close-up picture of a gadget. 24 for the cleverest wrong answer. So you do the math. And Dick.
I can't.
We'll, of course, catch you every week on the GizWiz podcast, gizwiz.tv. And we'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the
Perfect.
GizWiz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Bye.
The Tesla's only $550. Wow. Wow. But it doesn't have geofencing. Bill, Fullerton, California. I think the last call of the day. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
I've got a Sony television. I remember when TVs used to just be a TV.
Yep.
But this is a smart TV. It's running Android, and I get error messages, and it seems to freeze, and I have to literally unplug it and reboot it.
Oh. You know, this is why having computer technology everywhere is not a good idea. The other day I had my oven had to reboot, and I had to erase it. It was running Android. I had to erase it and start over.
Your oven?
My oven.
Oh my God.
I had ready to cook dinner. I had the salmon all prepped and the oven was it was in a boot loop. So this is why, computers, what are you going to do? That is not normal for Android TV. It's not normal for your Sony. I'm going to tell you something you probably already know. There's something wrong with it.
Okay.
It should not reboot ever. It should be pretty solid. I have an Android TV device, and Android TV is pretty reliable. But it's a computer, and you know how computers get. Something's wrong. I don't know if Sony will have a method. My oven did. I called the oven people, and they said, okay, unplug the oven, press and hold the knob, plug it in again, count to 10, and the thing rebooted, and it fixed itself. If Sony has a thing like that, that would be good. Otherwise, you might have to get them to come out and fix it, because that is not normal.
Yeah, or a way to plug it into your computer and...
Yeah.
Going on.
Yeah. You know, it is running Android TV, so there is a way, I'm sure, to get to the bootloader, just as there is on any Android device, and start over. But they don't tell you what that is. It's a secret, super secret password protected, you know, function. So you're gonna have to call Sony and say this, and it's not normal. Just because we make TVs with computers inside doesn't mean they should act like our PCs. Shouldn't be rebooting. I'm sorry that happened to you. Hey, thanks to all of you for joining us. You know, we got to all hang together because this technology stuff, it never works right. That's what I'm here for. Have a great Geek Week. We'll see you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called
TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.